So thank you all for coming. We just wanted to give you a brief update. Well, I don't know how brief it'll be, but it'll be an update on our cybersecurity. I think Jeff West was here last time we presented to the commission, and he's still going strong. And we've got some new wrinkles now that we're part of an electric company. So he'll be presenting. I also wanted to, Joe Green from our IT group is here for moral support. But maybe we can go around and just introduce ourselves so Jeff and Joe can kind of know who everybody are. So if you want to start us off, Eric.
Yeah, Eric Gordon with the Division of Public Utilities.
I'm Sherry Vance with the Commission.
I'm Barry McKay with Dominion Energy.
I'm Kelly Mendenhall with Dominion Energy.
I'm Jordan White with the Commission.
Dave Clark with the Commission.
Thad LeBar with the PSC.
Joseph Holland with
Doug Wheelwright with the Division.
Jeff Einfeld with the Division.
Brenda Salter with the Division.
Carol Revelt with the Public Service Commission.
I'm Jeff West with Dominion Energy.
I'm John Harding with the Commission.
Eric Martinson with the Public Service Commission.
Jill Green with Dominion.
Jennifer Clark also with Dominion.
Dan Martin with the Office.
All right. Take it away.
Thanks for having me. I actually enjoy coming over and visiting a little bit and getting a chance to talk with you about some of the things that we're doing from a cybersecurity perspective. My objective today is to remind you a couple of things. One is, we first came over in 2013. It looks like we're on a two-year cadence. Somebody must have a tickler in their file. We first came over in 2013, and actually we had come across the NARUC report for the commissions that talked a little bit about cybersecurity due diligence at an AGA event. And we had talked with our regulatory staff here, and they had said, maybe we should come over and talk with you a little bit about that. So we tried to do that proactively, and that was our first opportunity to come in 2013. And then we were invited back in 15. And again, thank you for having us in 17. I'll mention that in between this sequence, we've also had an opportunity to go up to Wyoming. Jen loves the trips to Wyoming because of the small plains and the bumpy air. Jen's a very confident person, except when you get her in a little plane with bumpy air.
Not okay.
So here we are, and I am reminded of this quote from the NARUC document where it encourages states to strategically engage with their partners over cybersecurity. And I think this is an example of that opportunity. It's a critical topic from my perspective, not just because it's part of my work responsibilities, but as you'll see in the next couple of slides, it's everywhere in what we do and say. So I have about 16 or 17 slides. My objective here today is to let you know that cybersecurity continues to be important for Dominion. It was important to us with Questar, and it continues to be important. And there are some things that we have added post-merger. We'll talk a little bit about some of those things. As Kelly and I visited, because this is a public hearing and a public meeting, there might be some things that you might ask about that I may say I'd prefer to answer that question in a private setting or in a private situation, your offices or our offices. So depending on where the conversation goes, there might be some things that I choose to defer depending on the nature of the question and what we ask about. Because we don't want to set ourselves up to be any more of a target than anything else, and there are some things that I'm comfortable saying publicly, and there are some things that I'm not. So that little disclaimer will get out there, if that's okay. Cybersecurity continues to be in the headline, and I hope that my guess is you'll recognize some of these names over on the far side. You've certainly heard about Equifax. You may have read about Deloitte and their recent troubles. Deloitte happens to be our new auditor, which makes for interesting questions when they come in to discuss with us cybersecurity and SOX-related controls. It's like, well, yeah, we're doing it. What are you doing? Kind of things. Not very comfortable conversations to have. WannaCry happened mid-year. It was a big deal. Some of you may or may not remember. In the May-June timeframe, within 24 hours, in 150 countries, 300-plus companies were affected by this outbreak, and it ran like wildfire. And we spent a lot of time, now that we're in a merge situation, coordinating between us and our Virginia headquarters. What were we seeing? What were they seeing? How do we fix this? What was the intelligence that we were gathering? And we literally worked starting, it started, I can remember we called Joe into my office on Friday afternoon, never a good time to come in, about 3:30, and said, we need to marshal the troops. There's something going on that we need to understand where we are and take some action. And they worked literally over the weekend. Very much appreciative of that effort to try and be sure that we were not going to be affected. Crash override is what happened to Ukraine. And some of you may be familiar with the electric situation that happened in Ukraine, where somebody took control of their control centers and started to shut down substations. And it was a coordinated attack that not only shut down substations, but disabled their, overwhelmed their phone systems so their customers could not call in, and they were out for an extended period of time. Dragonfly took place specifically targeting companies that have industrial control systems. We sometimes call that SCADA, or the systems that control our plants and facilities and pipes. That was targeted, and there were countries both in Europe, the Middle East, and the U.S. affected by this particular threat. My intent here is to say these are some things that are both in the news and some things that perhaps are not so prominent in the news, but in my world are pretty significant. They affect our industry, they affect our technology, and we're constantly trying to pay attention to what's happening. And most of this has been taking place since mid-year 17, so in the last 5 or so months. And there are more. We're reading today about the disclosure of the papers, you know, that have come out, and what's happening with the Queen of England's finances, or movie stores, or even Apple Computer trying to describe what's happening with their tax situation as some of those disclosures get out. So it's a constant theme. Sure.
Do you know much about the situation in the Ukraine? Was that a situation where the utility just wasn't prepared, or was that a vulnerability that really could exist if anyone as sophisticated as the ones who likely attacked them were to attack?
So I know enough about it to describe that it was a vulnerability that they sent to somebody from a phishing perspective, a traditional phishing campaign, infected their computer. Many of the machines in Ukraine might be bootleg copies of OSs, so they're not patchable because they might be bootlegged. And therefore, when it came in, it kind of ran wildfire to the point where the operators in their control systems literally were hands-off, and they're watching their monitors move around, and things were clicking and happening beyond their control, and they couldn't stop it at that point. The infection had occurred months earlier with an opportunity to get enough reconnaissance to understand the technology footprint and the topology of the assets so that they could, in fact, cause maximum downtime. But feel free to ask questions, and as we go through, I don't mind that at all. Things aren't slowing down. I'm not going to speak to the kinds of malware or the kinds of ransomware, but just notice the trends. These trends are generally in an upward fashion. WannaCry, NotPetya are types of ransomware. That's effectively things that you've heard about where somebody clicks on something, your machine gets infected, it locks up, and you're given a counter that says you've got X period of time to pay me some bitcoins, and we may or may not get you your key back to get your files. It's a pretty insidious problem. It's really an easy, inexpensive attack to launch because you can throw it out to a lot of people, and if some people start paying, it's just money in the bank and virtually untraceable because it's so anonymous. But a real, real problem. So that's the cyber activities not slowing down. This is my last general slide that talks a little bit about the problem of data breaches. I like this slide up here from Gemalto that tells us since 2013, just 4 short years ago, there have been 9 billion records that have been breached. I usually at this point like to ask the folks that we're visiting with, how many people have received a letter from somebody saying, your data may have been infected and you're open for credit monitoring. How many? Yeah, that's like virtually everybody. And for me, my favorite one was when I got into this role, I applied for a federal government security clearance so that I could go to classified briefings with DHS and TSA and FBI and whatnot, things like that. That required about a 40 or 50 page application. Who do I know? Where have I been? Every foreign visit in every foreign city over the last part of my adult life. Now, that wasn't easy to recall, you know, all the places. Who did you talk to? What did you do? All of that sort of stuff. Who was your family? Who are your acquaintances? All that information submitted. My clearance came. I got it. And the GAO quickly, in their problems, lost that information in a breach. Thank you very little. And so I got a letter from the government accounting office, not as a federal employee, but somebody who had submitted information to a government agency to trust them. So I'll speak more about that in just a second. But the problem of losing information is a constant challenge. Now, level set for everybody. September of 2016, the acquisition of Questar by Dominion was consummated. It was signed. We had been working on due diligence efforts. It became publicly announced February of 16, and there was even conversations preceding that, and you know the history of that probably as well as anybody. Mid-year this year, we had a name change. Dominion, in total, changed their name from Dominion Resources and rebrand the organizations to Dominion Energy. That's why we're now introducing ourselves as Dominion Energy. And we're still sometimes getting tongue-tied trying to figure out how do we introduce ourselves. Are we Dominion Questar? Are we Dominion Utah? Are we Dominion Energy Utah? And so we're still working on those, getting used to that. But that took place mid-year. And there's a lot of activity over this course of the year. I would say Joe's team, primarily from a technology perspective, and our application development groups have been working really, really hard trying to understand how do you put two companies together, systems, people, processes. And it's not just IT, it's HR, it's, you know, you've done a lot of work in the regulatory space, it's our engineering groups, it's our accounting functions. Lots of things have been happening that occupy our time as we try to become more of one company and understand how to do that. And we're not done. This will continue. There's lots of things still ahead of us that are to be done, and that work will continue. Now, because of that, I wanted to just share this, and I believe that you'll be familiar with this too. This is Dominion's now mission and value statements. And I'm not going to read it, but I think it's important from a value perspective that Dominion would say they are committed to safety, excellence, ethics, and teamwork. And we see those four monikers throughout our building now. We hear it spoken by senior executives, and that's an important part of the culture. And cybersecurity actually fits into our ability to stay safe or our ability to provide excellence or teamwork, because we can't have the delivery of systems and people without the technology that supports all of that. So we're very much committed. This is an important concept to Dominion. They speak about it often. So my message is that this has not received any less attention under the Dominion umbrella than it did before under the Questar umbrella. As an example of that, Dominion has organized security oversight and coordination this way. There are a variety of groups within the Dominion family that roll up and communicate regularly to a senior vice president and CIO. Joe and I know Rodney, and he's been here and has worked very hard at these merger-related activities. But the objective of this roll-up activity is really cross-coordination. So whether it's physical security, whether it's corporate safety, whether it's information technology or security governance or something happening on the physical front, those things are communicated and coordinated and rolled up so that we're not operating in silos. Dominion's a big company. For us, it feels like a big company. but there's nothing that's getting lost in the woodwork because there's a lack of coordination. The process and the infrastructure is in place to support good security practices and hygiene. Yes?
So under supply chain security, is that a reference to processes that you have in place to assure that equipment that's manufactured, particularly overseas, that doesn't have embedded in it some kind of malware or Trojan horse or...
Yeah, it includes that, and I will speak a little bit later about some specific things that we're doing relative to our third-party risk management, those that hold our data, and what we're doing to manage that. The company has been recently very interested in understanding if there's any technology where Kaspersky technology is embedded in any of our systems. That's a software provider from Russia, and there's been some challenges associated with that, and the company has been really interested to try and understand where that may be embedded. I don't think it's fair to say that we're down to the chipset. Where was that component manufactured? You know, what's in that chipset? But I think at some point, there's some due diligence that's going to need to be done across the industry to understand, hey, I'm not just buying a computer, but what's in the computer? I'm not just buying a switch, but what's in the switch?
Right.
It's a challenge.
So you're saying really that's not...
Not to that level, but I will speak to the point that we are doing coming up, if that's all right.
Sure.
Do you have a question?
Okay.
At the end of the day, what we're attempting to do, and this has not changed, is to protect the information assets of the corporation. We try to think about the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of systems. Now, if you think about that for just a minute, if we're trying to ensure the availability of a system, that means when our service technician is in their truck or vehicle and they're driving to a location to respond to a gas leak or an emergency, that means the system is available, it's up and running, and they can access the maps or the customer information or the emergency procedures right then when they need it. That's an example of availability. Confidentiality certainly implies that we have customer data. We have 1 million customers, and we know a lot about those customers. And so it behooves us to understand that data. How much do we really need in order to service that customer? And where is that data located, and how is it being protected? Are we taking appropriate due diligence steps to ensure that it's integrated, or that it's protected? And integrity just means that it's very basic level, that if the number says 2,000, that we really know that it's 2,000. So that if we're publishing a financial statement that says this is the earnings from Questar Pipeline, we really know that that's an accurate representation and that there's not ways to manipulate the numbers. So we're really thinking about those three components and all of the variations associated with that: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So this is what we've shown you before. This is a historic slide, and I wanted to bring it back because, and I'm not offended if you don't remember it, it's okay. But the reason I like this is because our objective is to prevent, detect, and mitigate cyber threats. Because we know that we can't prevent everything, but if you can't prevent it, then you've got to detect it, and if you detect it, then you've got to be able to respond and mitigate it. I'll tell you for an example, we had one instance in the corporation of a ransomware attack. There was an individual that clicked on something, and she called us and said, hey, my machine is doing one of those things where the screen's locked up. And so we had to respond immediately to figure out what to do before it migrated to either other machines or up to the network. And so that's when we moved into detection mode and then into mitigation, and it didn't get any further and it didn't result in any loss of data. But at that moment, those are calls where you start to ramp up into high gear and everybody shifts priorities and said, okay, we're now throwing a lot of effort at this to be sure we understand. And I've listed some of the things that are in place, and I'm not going to go through each of those technologies, but these are things that we've had in place to try and help with those three categories of activities over time. And I will tell you, from 2013 to 2017, not all of those things were in place. There were some things that we felt that we were more immature on and needed to strengthen our posture or improve our position. So some of these technologies have been added. Some of them have been strengthened. Some things have changed over the course of those from 13 to 17. All built on what we hope are good awareness and training programs for our employees and policies and procedures that articulate what we should and shouldn't do. As I came through the lobby this morning, I noticed there was a sign about ID theft. Somebody's put a poster up in the lobby talking about ID theft. Somebody's thinking about that, and you know, the state has lots of information about me, and I hope that they're doing a good job at protecting that information. We certainly know about lots of instances of W-2 fraud, where somebody is purporting to be the CFO or CEO sending a spam email to somebody in the organization and says, send me your W-2 files, I need to look at that right now. The files go out, and then fraudulent tax-related information gets sent either to the IRS or the various states. Tax returns get filed, and money gets exfiltrated.
As far as detection goes, does anything like put information in a honeypot and watch to see if goes after it?
So we don't run a honeypot specifically, but we have our endpoint firewall vendor does run a honeypot service, so we will have things that come into our organization, we will send them out to a service that they run that's a honeypot type service, and then they'll detonate, meaning they'll try and run the malware in their environment and then come back to us and say, looks okay or doesn't.
Okay.
What's a honeypot?
Yeah.
I'll let you go at it.
As far as I understand, it's a basically some companies, I don't know if this is the same way that you're referring to it, but some companies will put confidential information on a separate server that doesn't have any tie to the network, and they'll sit there and watch the intruder and see how they're manipulating the system to get in as a learning opportunity. And that's kind of what I was wondering. Do you research? Do you hire third party companies to attack your system?
It's usually all the lawyers' confidential information.
They're baiting them to see if they'll
learn what they're doing to get into your system.
So think of a honeypot as nothing more than something that attracts, you know, a bear or an animal. So you stick it out there, and then you let people try to. I was going to say noodle. That's not probably a good technical term, but you let people go after that machine, knowing that you don't have anything of real value on it, to just try and see what they're doing, see their techniques and tactics and go on. And for us, we don't put machines out to do that specifically, but again, we have one of our firewall vendors where we can take that information that comes to us that's unrecognizable, goes up to their system, and then they will detonate it and check and let us know if it's acceptable or not. That's a service that we subscribe to. All right. Any other questions about honeypots? Not the same as a honeydew, but perhaps related. So this is what we have done historically. We've had these things in place. Now, some ads. Post-merger, we've added some things from Dominion. This is good. This is the point I wanted to speak to. We've added a third-party risk management program, and I have the next slide that'll talk in a little bit of detail about that. So we did this before, but this is even more formal. We now conduct background checks on all of our users that have privileged account access. So if you're an administrator, a lot of Joe's folks, they have to go through and have a full background check. Criminal, credit, those kinds of things, to see if everything's on the up and up. We also do that for vendors or third parties that have what we call unescorted access. So if we're giving a vendor an account to access our system to, let's say, monitor our building's HVAC system, because they're the contractor that manages that system, and they're coming into our systems, we now do background checks on their employees. And we had, gosh, I think it was like 600 or 700 contractors that had accounts that had access to our systems, and we had several that we denied, you know, post doing the background check. And any new has to go through this process before we grant access. So we try to do more due diligence around who they are and what their background is. There's been new training. that's been rolled out to all of our employees, and this is an example of some of the training. This is an interesting training here that we've been asking our employees to finish over the course of the year. There's an actual phishing course, and we're about 92% of our employees completed. I monitor that each week, and we remind some, and to the Questar employees, if you haven't completed it, you've got a month.
You should tell them at what level they've all been caught.
Yeah, so that's coming up. As a follow-up to the phishing training, we actually now run phishing simulations on a monthly basis, where the folks back east will send an email out through the organization to just see if employees are paying attention to the training, if they've learned how to spot potential phishing messages, because phishing is the number one vector for attacking and getting after employees, and so now we're checking. And some of them are pretty obvious. People have, a UPS purchase thing for some strange product, but some of them are really tough. Like, hey, your vacation balance is overdrawn and you need to click on this from an HR department and it's not from HR. But if we know how to do that, the bad guys know how to do that. And I wanted to come back to another point that you asked. I think you asked if we hire third parties. We do hire third parties to come in and white hat or try to attack our systems. So we are routinely on our external web-facing applications. They are scanning our systems on a daily basis, looking for that. We've also hired third parties to actually try to penetrate our systems and give us reports and issues. We've hired, not hired, but we worked with the Idaho National Labs, the folks out of Idaho Falls that specialize in control systems. They came down and spent some time assessing how we're architected and our security around our control systems, specifically the SCADA activities. So we do that on a pretty regular basis. Even post-merger, when we started to connect the networks up, we hired a third-party pen tester to see if you're in Salt Lake, can you get to Virginia and vice versa, to see if those connections were done securely and how those are being protected. So that's done regularly.
So I know that, Questar, each of their customers, their million customers, can access their bills online and look at different things. Is that on a separate server, or is that something that you have to monitor all the time, or how does that work?
So that we call it online bill pay, and there's pieces to Questar Gas's webpage which might be general information, like here's a phone number to call. But when it comes to authentication, you can log in and you can actually pay your bill and you can do those kinds of things. There's two components that I might highlight. Yes, that is on an external facing application, so it's a system that sits external so that you can look at it and I can look at it. There's authentication on that page, meaning somebody has to have username and password. We've actually strengthened the authentication requirements about how to get in. It requires, in order to register, you have to know something about yourself. You just can't get to the page and start guessing and sign up as if you're somebody else. You might have to know something about what's actually on the bill. It's sent to somebody's home. The payment piece itself is actually from the external facing application. The payment piece is actually outsourced to Western Union. So when you click to pay, it goes out of our system over to Western Union, and so all the PCI payment card industry credit card requirements shift to them, because we don't store or process any of that information on our systems or servers. So hopefully Western Union resonates with you, and you know how we pay our bills and those kind of things.
Speaking of new servers, have you started to migrate anything to the cloud, or do you hold all of your own equipment?
It depends. We have some things in the cloud. Our company performance appraisal system, which everybody loves, is a cloud-based application. Our training application is a cloud-based application. So the answer is yes for some things, but not necessarily for strategic business systems. Our SCADA systems, our revenue systems, our HR systems, our engineering management systems are all internally hosted and managed.
Customer information.
Customer information internally managed.
The reason I ask, I know there's a big industry move to move away from purchasing new hardware from hardware suppliers and move everything to more of an open stack cloud-based operation.
Certainly the cloud vendors would love you to do that. That's the industry buzz. You know, those that host AWS or Azure cloud services would say, yeah, come over here and we'll do it for you. It's easier, it's cheaper, it's scalable, and there are pros and cons about that. There's a due diligence process that we go through when anybody says we'd like to consider a cloud-based option, that we would try to understand not just the security, but are there interfaces requirement, and what are the financial considerations? Because sometimes the cloud may appear financially viable in the short term, but if you go out 2-3 years, maybe after an asset on-prem is depreciated, maybe it switches over and it's no longer that same financial advantage. But there can be lots of reasons to doing it. You may need to scale up very quickly because you want to swap out, you know, your email system, and you know, you want to run it up in Office 365, or you want to outsource this or that. So there's lots of reasons to consider it, but I would say it's not an all or nothing decision. It's very much depends.
It's not a focus of the company. No.
It very much depends. And I would tell you that Dominion generally has is more on-premise focus than cloud-based focus. But there are cloud applications, and if you pressed me on it, I could probably think of, you know, a dozen that Questar uses right now. But again, they're generally business applications that I wouldn't consider mission critical. Okay, let's talk a little bit about third party, and I want to get back to, you know, supply chain and some of the things that we're doing. The focus of this particular effort is to understand vendors that we partner with that have PII, personal identifiable information, PHI, personal health related information. So who would that be? Well, the first thought that comes to my mind is maybe a benefits provider. So we currently use Blue Cross as our benefits provider, or maybe it's the dental provider, or it's, you know, think of your HR related services. We give them lots of data about our employees. It might be the employee number, it might be their email address, it might be their name, it could even be their social in some instances. I'm very interested in the program that we have, is very interested to say, if we're going to give this to you, I want to know what you're doing with it. How are you protecting it? So we actually go through a couple step process. The first thing that we do is we assess the risk associated with that particular vendor and the data that we give to them. And the risk can come out high, medium, and low. And based upon that high, medium, and low risk, we then have engaged a third-party company that will go to that vendor and either deliver them a questionnaire that's either a short or a medium-length questionnaire, or if it's a high risk, actually go to them on-premise and sit down with them for a day or two and discuss their security posture. Coming out of that assessment will then come a security score, and we will assess their security posture. And it will come out satisfactory, unsatisfactory, or needs improvement. Kind of sounds like what happens when you do a performance appraisal, doesn't it? But if it comes out needs improvement, it'll say, here are the 10 things. We then have a phone call with that vendor and say, you know, you have our data, but you're not encrypting it. Or you have your data and you don't have a disaster recovery plan. Or you don't have privileged account administration figured out the way that we would like, or appropriate password controls. So they've got the data, and there's lots of these people that honestly, this is kind of eye-opening for them, because they are providing a service, they have engaged a software solution, it's running on some cloud provider, and they don't know who it is or where it is or how it even works. And so we're saying, wait a minute, if you've got a million records of our customers, you need to know how it works, because we want to know how it works. And at the end of the day, if it's unsatisfactory and they're unwilling to resolve the issues, then we look for alternatives in trying to find how that works. Now, I will tell you that we generally don't do this process for all of our government partners. But I would say, for everything that the, you know, that Questar gives to the commission, that gives to the state, we are equally interested to be sure that everything is really carefully taken care of that we give to you, because we don't want to have a situation like I did with the Office of OMB, you know, where we provide the data and then it's, you know, lost. Because ultimately then we feel part of that responsibility. This has been an interesting process for us. We've currently gone through this past year an assessment of, I'd say, 50 to 60 of our third-party vendors that have had our data off-premise, and what are they doing to protect it? And they're not all clean, I will tell you that. So we're working through that process with them, trying to get them to strengthen their security posture, to care about it the same way that we care about it. So that's the nature of this particular activity. Very formalized. We continue to have, we had a slide before. I don't expect you to read this. The gist of this is that Dominion is connected to various institutions, agencies, and organizations to help us understand threats to our cybersecurity posture. Over on the far left side, it talks about federal and intelligence communities. So everything from DOD to DHS, TSA.
Are you part of an ISAC?
Absolutely. So I have credentials and log on daily to the DNG ISAC. Right here.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah.
And we also have credentials to log on to the EISAC, which is the electric sector ISAC.
Okay.
Everybody know what an ISAC is?
Nope.
Information sharing.
Information sharing.
Analysis center.
There you go. I thought it would be listed under federal and intelligence community instead, so that I hadn't gotten to your industry yet.
And the reason is because it's really not run by the government.
Yeah.
It's run by industry associations. And the ISAC intent is to receive information from federal partners, aggregate it, and then put it on a portal and distribute it. And so it's on the portal, and we can look at the portal, and I'll get daily updates. In fact, if I was to look at my phone right now, I'll bet you I have at least two or three messages that are ISAC related from one of these two sources.
Yeah. So if you see something funny, one of your protocol items is to contact
to report it.
Whatever, the EISAC or the DN.
And they actually, DNG, EISAC. This stands for downstream natural gas. And this is electric.
Yeah.
And these two actually are embedded together, and the analysts work together, and they actually share information. So we get the benefit of electric sector information, and because it's a bigger footprint.
Right. And you're...
And you're Dominion is now electric.
Yeah, and you're a big fuel source, obviously, for electric.
Yeah. And there are lots of these. There's a very strong financial sector ISAC. There's a water ISAC. So
IT.
That's a good question for all of you as you're meeting with other companies that you deal with. Are they members of an ISAC?
Yeah.
So, but we spend time with industry associations, you know, American Gas Association, INGA, EEI. We work with, here's our public service commissions, you know, whether it's in Virginia or South Carolina or here in Utah, we appreciate those opportunities. I mentioned earlier some of the work that we've done with Idaho National Labs, INL. So we try to have connections to all of these. And my intent here is not to have anybody remember any of this, but to know that we've worked really hard to stay connected, whether it's federal, state, industry, or other associations, R&D type groups, so that we can, when we were literally working on the WannaCry issue, I received an email, there was a message that went out from the AGA, this association, and we got a reply back. There was about five people on this email, and I got an email back from somebody in Southern California, and I would say that was the first actionable intelligence that we had, even that we could share with Virginia, because they had picked something up from some source and it was working really, really well. And that was kind of the almost an informal, who do you know kind of a deal. Last week I was in Tulsa with people from Con Edison, and I was there with people from Duke Energy and know all of these individuals firsthand. This is not the city. That's where I live, but that's not the city. This is a defense research organization. Now, why do we do it? All of this stuff that we do is to try and interrupt the kill chain. That may be a term that's familiar or not familiar to you. But if you're a bad guy, if you're a hacker, this is what you want to do. And traditionally, this is how they do it. So if you want to be a hacker, this is it. You start over here, and you work your way along this continuum, and you start taking each step. And if you can detect or prevent anywhere along this kill chain, it slows it down or stops it. That's what we try to do. And if somebody's unimpeded and they get all the way down here, then we're dealing with exfiltration. The data goes out, the information goes out, the system is breached, the service turns off, you know, whatever happens. So we don't really want to fight the battle down here. At this point, if your system is overwhelmed with a denial of service attack, you know, we're really scrambling at this point. It happens. We're trying to be upstream of all this. But these are the various steps that bad guys go through. And there's, you know, a good analogy. You can think about if somebody was trying to rob your home, you know, they might drive around the neighborhood and see what your pattern is and see when you come and go to work, or they might try to understand if you have an alarm system, if you have a dog, if you have a fence, if you leave your garage door open, you know, then they'll start working on it from that perspective. It's pretty analogous to what happens in the cyber world. Final two, we're in the home stretch. This is off our Dominion external webpage. It's a commitment to cybersecurity. I'm not going to read it, but it just is, again, to reiterate the point that from Dominion's perspective, cybersecurity is an important part of our business and what we do. It's out on the external webpage. A lot of companies, you'd be hard-pressed to find something about cybersecurity on their external webpage, but we've got it. And finally, from the NARUC document, we really appreciate the opportunity to come and visit with the commission to try and have this be more of a partnership. I know that Barry and Kelly and Jen and the crew have worked really hard to form good relationships with the commission, the division, all of those entities, so that we can continue to advance mutual interests. And from a cybersecurity perspective, that's the same. We're very much interested in that. Luckily, we're not here asking for a large increase in budget dollars. We're able to operate within the parameters that we have been given and continue to have a good cybersecurity posture. So appreciate that opportunity to come visit with you. That's what I have.
So are you comfortable or confident that you have the tools and the resources to do what reasonably can be done to protect the systems and the customer information and you know, anything else that's vulnerable to a cyber attack?
It's recognizing
that there's nothing perfect and that there are always people pinging against you and
every day.
Do you feel like there's a vulnerability that you're not able to address or that you need our help to address?
I'd say the part that makes me most nervous is what I don't know. And I don't say that flippantly, because there's a lot of things that I do know about our systems and technology. There's a lot of things that Joe knows. And we're working very very diligently to try and get through those things.
You're using state-of-the-art tools. And
with our partners in, and that's the way I would describe it, with our partners in Virginia, they also know what we know. So we've been very forthcoming on where we are, where they are relative to their posture and our posture, what things we can do to strengthen it. And I, from my perspective, I don't feel like we're going from bad to good. I feel like we're going from good to better. You know, kind of a situation where we're trying to ensure that we have all that we can do. And again, I have not listed, when on the one slide where I talked about the new things that we're doing, I've not listed everything because I'm not comfortable describing everything.
Yeah.
But there's even more that we're working on. So it's taken real seriously.
Kind of a follow-up to that, but bigger is not always better. Yeah, are there, is there any area where you feel like the Questar system was better than what you have with Dominion?
I don't think so. You know, I paused for a minute to think about it. Sometimes it's different. We might do it this way, and they're now going to do it this way. And that's okay, because there's different technologies and different approaches to it. But I don't know that it's necessarily that we've stepped back in any fashion. The one area that I neglected to mention that was on that slide was an example of where it's getting better for us is they have a 24/7 cybersecurity operations center. They call it a CSOC from a kind of an acronym perspective. But that's a center where if you walked into it, it has, you know, it's like a control room where there's computer screens and all of that information is monitored on a 24/7 basis. We were smaller. We didn't have the resources to do that kind of thing in the past. Joe and I would would say that from a technology perspective, we used to have probably our employees would have, you know, many hats. There may be somebody who is in the network area, but they also worked on virtualization technology, and they worked on firewalls, and then they worked on switches and routers. So they may have done five or six things. In Dominion's world, that's much more specialized. You know, if you're a firewall person, you work on firewalls and you get really, really good at firewalls and your protocols associated with that. So that's an opportunity where our employees have a chance to really deepen their understanding, because we can now partner with these teams that are have much more depth, you know, from a resource perspective for a particular technology. So I think that's been a plus too. And I guess I would just say, you know, Joe, I don't know if you've anything that you'd want to add to that, or and it's okay either way.
That's
okay. Thank you. I think my questions, next one's probably asking the same thing, but I'm it's intuitive, I think, that being connected now to a larger system, maybe you feel, or it's just part of the world that you live in, that would expand your vulnerabilities, or access points, those kinds of things. I'm wondering if, but I guess what I'm wondering about is, do you feel that you're matching that with the capabilities that exist, and the protections that Dominion has installed as your new owner, basically?
Sure. I would say yes, and the evidence of that would be the third-party assessment we had done when we started to connect our systems up.
Okay.
So they were very concerned, rightfully so, that if something happened on a workstation in Ogden, if something bad happened in Ogden, could it get through Salt Lake and back to them? Mm-hmm. And conversely, we're the same. If something happened on a machine in Ohio, could it come this direction?
Sure.
And that was what that intent was, to actually to look at that and to see what information is flowing back and forth, and could that be penetrated or breached? And that was actually done a few months ago, and that was a very favorable outcome as far as the protections that were in place.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you or can you talk about whether or not you coordinate or talk with Pacific Corp? Because I know you supply a lot of their gas plants, but is that something that you two coordinate together in terms of cybersecurity and some of the issues that you have?
So I would say for me, not at a local level. I'm not talking with them on a regular basis. But at the industry association, I know Pacific Corps and Rocky Mountain people from Portland. I know people from Mid-America Corporation that are part of you know, those associations, whether it's Michael or Peter or, you know, some of those folks, I know them personally and they know who I am, and we do talk in those circles. If something occurred where I felt like I needed to, I would have no problem making a phone call.
Thank you.
Good discussion. We're learning. We're slower. We're connected now, back to Richmond essentially, on all of our laptops as well as our desktops. So sometimes when I want to send an email to Kelly, it has to go all the way to Richmond, come all the way back.
Walk to him by then.
We just yell through the
wall.
Send
an email.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good reasons to not send.
I was just
going to
say, finally.
This is an attorney's dream. They've always wanted those sent emails to stop. No, but it, I think just from where I've seen it the most, and Jeff's done a great job, but just we personally, the fishing things, we're kind of funny how many of us got caught with that you just sometimes aren't, and we hadn't necessarily been tested all on that before, and it certainly has made me.
We used to just test at our yeah. pen test, you know, annual pen test experience, and that's how the pen testers got through.
And I was
the very first time we took a crack at this, it was a $50 Amazon gift card if you responded to some sort of an HR survey, but it required your credentials to get to the survey. And you know, I tongue-in-cheek laugh at one of the and we only sent it to like IT leadership and certain business leadership, and we had a really high success click rate on that and people giving up their credentials, which is not a good sign. And we teased with the executives at the point, and they said, oh yeah, that's really bad. And I said, it's only because we didn't actually attempt to get at you, or it had been worse. But one of our IT professionals said, yeah, I came back from my meeting and it was 8:30 and I saw this, and the teaser was the first 50 people to respond will get the gift card. And she said, well, I didn't even try because I knew I wasn't going to be in the first 50. So
anyway, we'll, and I don't know if it is just coincidentally 2 years, but obviously we're prepared whenever we may need to have or sit down and have a further discussion. I do think I've seen more of the focus at our NARUC meetings. They certainly, those were new panels back in 13, and now they're pretty focused and consistent with what they're doing. And sadly, some utilities, I think, have had some breaches, so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice window. You guys looking for maybe just a little sunlight coming in 401? How you restructure?
We convinced Doppel to trade us rooms permanently.